Okay. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. Buckingham Palace has released more details about the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth and her internment on Monday. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
Buckingham Palace has released details of proceedings which will follow the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II on Monday. 2 minutes of silence will be observed across the UK at the end of Queen Elizabeth II's state funeral at Westminster Abbey on Monday, giving the public across the nation a chance to pay their respects to the late monarch. Then Elizabeth's coffin will be transported through the historic heart of London from Westminster Abbey to Wellington Arch near Buckingham Palace on a horse-drawn gun carriage with Charles and other royals walking behind. Charles de la Desma, London.
Ukrainian officials said a mass grave with more than 440 bodies was discovered in Izium in northern Ukraine, where Russian forces were ousted just days ago. A Ukrainian counteroffensive pushed Russian troops from the region last weekend. The Russians had been occupying the city of Kharkiv in that region. Ukrainian officials said the troops left behind large amounts of ammunition and equipment, according to a report on Reuters. Reuters could not immediately verify the Ukrainian claim, and there was no immediate public comment from Russia on the allegation. Ukraine and its Western allies have accused Russian forces of perpetrating war crimes there. Russia has denied targeting civilians or committing war crimes. Meanwhile, President Biden announced another $600 million arms package for Ukraine, the 21st time the Defense Department has pulled weapons and other equipment off the shelves to deliver to Ukraine, according to the White House. By remote, this is VOA News. President Biden is touting a tentative deal that averts a potentially devastating railway strike here in the U.S. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has that story.
This agreement is a big win for America.
At the White House, the president greeted labor and business negotiators, whom he says worked 20 straight hours to reach an agreement.
I don't think they've been to bed yet.
Trying to avoid a strike that would have started tomorrow, disrupting passenger traffic and freight lines, which the president says deliver essentially every good Americans need.
Everything you rely on.
He says the deal can avert significant economic damage. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The White House press secretary on Thursday denounced the practice by the governors of the state of Florida and Texas of busing migrants to Washington and other locations as a cruel, premeditated political stunt. The office of the Florida governor said planes carrying migrants were sent to the wealthy resort island of Martha's Vineyard on Wednesday night, while the Texas governor said his state intentionally sent two buses of migrants to the home of U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris in Washington. Officials in both locations confirm the arrivals. The actions by the governors, both fierce critics of the Biden administration, are the latest series of moves by Republican governors to transport migrants to liberal cities and states to protest what they say are inadequate federal efforts on southern border security. An intelligence report validates U.S. predictions of the threat from the terror group Islamic State. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
According to a newly declassified report, U.S. intelligence officials predicted 2 years ago that the Islamic State group would likely regain much of its former strength, particularly if Western forces reduce their role in countering the extremist movement. Analysts said many of the judgments in the 2020 report now appear prescient, particularly as the group is resurgent in Afghanistan following last year's American withdrawal. The group no longer controls huge swaths of territory or staging attacks against the U.S., but it is slowly rebuilding in Iraq and Syria and fighting local governments in places including Afghanistan. Norman Hall, Washington.
The U.S. Congress is moving ahead on bipartisan action, strengthening trade and defense ties with Taiwan as the self-governing island faces new threats from China. The U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved the Taiwan Policy Act, clearing the way for $6.5 billion in enhanced security funding over 5 years to come up for a full vote on the Senate floor. The measure would also designate Taiwan a major non-NATO ally. For more news, join us at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Today is Friday, September 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. announces another multi-million dollars military package for Ukraine as the European Union pledges more support.
It is important that we understand that, yes, this comes at a high cost, but the international peace order and democracy is priceless.
A UN report accuses Nicaragua's government of alleged civil and political rights abuse of its people.
The report presents a withering account of the lengths to which the government of President Daniel Ortega will go to maintain its iron grip on power.
And Russia closes one of its few remaining independent media outlets. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The Biden administration has announced another $600 million in military aid to Ukraine. It comes as the U.S. rushes more weapons to fuel Kyiv's counteroffensive that has reclaimed large stretches of the embattled country and forced Russian troops to retreat. This, as European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen says, supporting Ukraine comes at a high cost, but freedom, quote, is priceless, unquote, amid soaring inflation and high energy prices in Europe. Speaking in Kyiv, von der Leyen reiterated that the bloc would be unwavering in its backing of Ukraine as cracks start to appear among member states in how to further punish Russia for the invasion of its neighbor, according to Reuters. European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen.
The main focus right now is supporting Ukraine financially with the military capabilities Ukraine needs. And we see now that the sanctions have a deep effect in the Russian economy. They are really grinding into the Russian economy. So it needed a certain amount of time that they unfold their impact, and this is visible now. It is important that we understand that, yes, this comes at a high cost, but the international peace order and democracy is priceless. And besides the overarching motivation to make sure that autocracy will not win, but democracy will prevail, and I'm deeply convinced that Ukraine and Europe, the democracies, will prevail.
That's European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen. The United States and Russia are calling for restraint as fighting on the border between Armenia and Azerbaijan has left a total of about 155 troops dead. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports on the escalation of decades-old bloodshed between the two former Soviet republics.
Relatives of Armenian servicemen wounded in night clashes with Azerbaijan gathered outside a military hospital in Yerevan. Yerevan says 105 of its troops have been killed. Baku says about 49 of its troops have been killed. At the State Department, spokesperson Ned Price said the U.S. is particularly concerned by reports of civilians hurt inside Armenia, and that Secretary of State Antony Blinken has spoken to Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev.
He urged President Aliyev to cease hostilities immediately, to disengage military forces, to pull forces back from the border, and to cease hostilities that could endanger civilians, and to work to resolve all outstanding issues between Armenia and Azerbaijan through peaceful negotiations.
Armenian residents of the village of Sotka near the border with Azerbaijan told reporters homes were hit by Azeri shelling and burned down. On Tuesday, Blinken said he had spoken to the leaders of both countries.
Spoke to both, urged them to do everything possible to pull back from any conflict and to get back to talking about building a lasting peace between their countries.
The Armenian Ministry of Defense released a video Tuesday that it says shows Azerbaijani forces advancing on its territory. One expert told VOA he is surprised at this surge in hostilities in light of all the negotiations that had been going on. Richard Kozlarik is a former U.S. ambassador to Azerbaijan. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
And now suddenly we're in the middle of what I consider to be a major step backward in that process. We are, for me, it feels like it was in November of 2020 when the 44-day war broke out.
Late last month, Azerbaijan's Ministry of Defense also published images of army units deployed in the strategic town of Lahin in the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh. During the 2020 war, Azerbaijan reclaimed broad swaths of Nagorno-Karabakh. Russia operates a military base in Armenia and in the past has been seen as an ally of Yerevan and a key power broker in the region. But experts say with Russia immersed in its invasion of Ukraine, it is uncertain what role Moscow will play in this conflict. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
A report submitted to the UN Human Rights Council this week on Nicaragua's human rights situation condemns what it calls the further deterioration of civil political rights by a government seeking to keep its people in check. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report presents a withering account of the lengths to which the government of President Daniel Ortega will go to maintain its iron grip on power. It accuses the government of silencing critical and dissenting voices in Nicaragua, deepening the political crisis which is tearing the country apart. Christian Salazar Folkman is Director of Field Operations and Technical Cooperation for the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. He says at least 195 perceived government critics have been arbitrarily detained. He says 50 people arrested in the context of last year's presidential elections have been sentenced this year, in some cases up to 13 years imprisonment. He speaks through an interpreter.
At least 28 or 29 of these persons are still detained in a police detention center in reportedly inhuman conditions. While some of the prisoners have finally been able to see their children, who are minors, many have been excluded from doing so for over a year now.
He says the Human Rights Office has documented many acts of harassment against human rights defenders, clergy, and actual or supposed political opponents. A number of these attacks, he says, have been against the Catholic Church. Folkman says restrictions on free expression have intensified, as have attacks on press and academic freedom. These restrictions, together with adverse living conditions, he says, have significantly increased those leaving Nicaragua. He speaks through an interpreter.
The number of Nicaraguan refugees and asylum seekers rose to 200,000 persons, three-quarters of them in Costa Rica. In the first 6 months of 2022, 84,055 people were intercepted at the border of the United States, compared to 5,450 people in all of 2020.
Folkman says November municipal elections likely will not be free and fair unless the government implements reforms recommended by the Office of the High Commissioner. Nicaragua's Attorney General, Wendy Carolina Morales Urbina, rejects the report as a manipulation and distortion of conditions in her country. She describes the content as part of the interventionist design applied by the United States and European countries. She calls the report deceitful and says Nicaragua would not accept recommendations that seek to interfere in its internal affairs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The body of Britain's Queen Elizabeth II is in Westminster Hall, where she will lie in state for 4 days ahead of her funeral. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Leaving home for the last time, Queen Elizabeth II's coffin, adorned with the imperial state crown, was carried by horse-drawn gun carriage, the same that had borne the bodies of her mother and father. Tens of thousands of people watched from the roadside to catch a final glimpse, offer a last goodbye, and witness firsthand an extraordinary piece of history unfolding. King Charles III led the royal family behind the coffin, flanked by his siblings. Behind them, reunited in grief for their grandmother, Prince William and Prince Harry. The crowd watched in silence. Some threw flowers, some quietly wept. All were moved in the moment of shared mourning. Silver Kleinscheck is an American citizen living in London.
There's such a respect for, I don't know, a better way to put it, but pomp and circumstance in this country that
really pulls people together, and it's really an honor to be a part of it.
Margaret Stork was visiting from Bristol in the west of England.
So proud, I feel elated. That's all I can say. Filled with emotion, it was well worth the wait.
Gun salutes echoed across the capital. In London's Hyde Park, thousands more people watched on big screens. Under late summer sunshine, the procession arrived in Westminster, a journey the Queen had made so many times before, across 7 decades on the British throne, stretching back to the government of Winston Churchill. Her coffin was carried into Westminster Hall by guardsmen from the 1st Battalion Coldstream Guards, who had flown back from Iraq for the occasion. At the end of a brief service, the Queen's body officially lay in state. The doors of the Great Hall opened for the public to mourn their monarch. Outside, lines of people several kilometres long had already formed. They could face a wait of up to 27 hours. Most seem unperturbed. Among them, 61-year-old Stephen Holdgate.
I have had any sleep whatsoever. I'm just going with the energy that's within. I feel very uplifted, very calm and happy. Happy to be able to show my last respects to the Queen.
Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In other news, Novaya Gazeta, one of Russia's few remaining independent news outlets, was stripped of its last media license on Thursday. Russia's Supreme Court, in effect, banned Novaya Gazeta's online version days after a Moscow district court banned Novaya Gazeta's newspaper and its sister magazine, No, founded less than 3 months ago. The media watchdog, Raskolnadzor, had accused Novaya Gazeta's web version of repeatedly violating the restrictions imposed on, quote, foreign agents, unquote, a designation applied to the paper that had also been assigned to numerous other voices and organizations at odds with the Kremlin. Editor-in-chief Dmitry Muratov, a Nobel Peace laureate for his efforts to uphold critical news reporting, expressed his anger at the decision in court. The paper is a stalwart of Russia's media scene since its foundation in 1993, with money from Nobel Peace Prize of late Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. It had carved out a niche as Russia's leading investigative news outlet, even as press freedoms were rolled back. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. This year's gathering of leaders at the UN General Assembly is taking place in the shadow of Queen Elizabeth's funeral and as the war in Ukraine heads into a possible decisive period. VOA's United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
Queen Elizabeth's funeral on September 19th has presented logistical challenges for leaders attending the 77th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Some speeches and meetings may have to be shuffled as they dash from London to New York. This year's meeting takes place at a time of great peril, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says.
Our world is blighted by war, battered by climate chaos, scared by hate, and shamed by poverty, hunger, and inequality.
Russia's war in Ukraine, which may be at a militarily decisive moment, is certain to dominate the annual meetings. The UN Security Council will meet Thursday at the foreign ministers' level to discuss developments. The situation of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is of particular concern. Rafael Mariano Grossi is the International Atomic Energy Agency Director General.
We are playing with fire. We cannot continue in a situation when we are one step away from a nuclear accident. The safety of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is hanging by a thread.
Western officials, meanwhile, want to firm up support from some countries that may be wavering as the war grinds on. Richard Gowan is the UN director for the International Crisis Group.
Many African and Asian countries have security relationships with Russia or economic relationships with Russia. And while they were willing to criticize the invasion back in March, They don't want to keep on picking fights with Moscow at the UN.
But with Russian President Vladimir Putin not attending the annual gathering, he rarely does, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's participation uncertain, no breakthrough is expected. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Thank you, Margaret. U.S. Special Envoy for Climate John Kerry pledged support for Africa's effort to deal with the impact of climate change during a speech Thursday at a conference in Senegal. The African Ministerial Conference on the Environment brings together more than 50 ministers from across the continent to coordinate the fight against climate change. Annika Hammerschlag reports from the conference in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Throughout his roughly 20-minute speech, U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, Kerry, reiterated the importance of partnerships in the battle against the climate crisis. He says the private sector, civil society organizations, governments, and indigenous groups must come together. Kerry noted the devastating impacts of climate change in Africa, which is home to 17 of the world's 20 most climate-vulnerable countries. He also noted the discrepancy between developed and developing nations. 20 countries, including the U.S., are responsible for 80% of the world's emissions, compared to 48 of sub-Saharan African countries, which are responsible for just 0.5%.
And is there a disparity in that? Yes, there is. Is there an unfairness built into that? Yes, there is. Mother Nature does not measure where the emissions come from. They don't have a label of one country or another on them. And it's important for all of us to now come together to figure out how we're going to compensate for that and deal with it.
Kerry says the United States is committed to helping more than 500 million people in developing countries adapt to the impacts of climate change this decade through initiatives that improve water storage capacity and climate-resilient agriculture and infrastructure. The conference is taking place in the wake of a major flooding and drought across the continent, which have aggravated food insecurity, damaged vital infrastructure, and cost fragile economies billions of dollars. Collins Nzovu is the Minister of Green Economy and Environment in Zambia. He says he's thrilled America is back in the game of fighting the climate crisis after a four-year lapse.
America's leadership is required at this critical time. I think we want to urge America to come on board and come on board in a big way. The fact that John Kerry has been going around the world preaching to everybody about the negative effects of climate change and also marshalling support, particularly for African states and obviously particularly for my country, Zambia, I think is commendable.
Kerry is on a two-nation tour of West Africa. He began his visit Monday in Nigeria, where he met top government officials, including President Muhammadu Buhari, and pledged to support the country's efforts to transition to green energy. Leila Benali is the Minister of Energy Transition and Sustainable Development for Morocco and the President of the UN Assembly for the Environment. She said she appreciated Kerry's recognition of the unfair burden African countries carry when it comes to the impact of climate change.
But I think the most important point that he mentioned was this issue of mobilizing co-financing from multilateral development banks, public and private sources, and putting in that in front of bankable projects.
She says trillions of dollars are needed to help countries deal with biodiversity loss, drought, and other impacts of the climate crisis. Kerry says the U.S. would announce further commitments at a climate conference in Egypt in November. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
This is Science in a Minute.
Around 66 million years ago, nearly three-quarters of the world's plant and animal species, including the dinosaurs, were destroyed in what is called the Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event. The most popular theory about the cause of this disaster was a 10-kilometer-wide asteroid that crashed into what is now Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. Other theories behind the extinction of the dinosaurs include the effects of major global volcanic eruptions or a combination of different agents of disaster. A new study led by researchers at Dartmouth College provides more evidence that volcanic activity appears to have been the key driver of the mass extinctions. The study authors point out in a Dartmouth press release that of Earth's top five mass extinction events, four took place around the same time when volcanic outbursts flooded wide areas of our planet with lava. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the New York Times reports the U.S. Justice Department issued some 40 subpoenas seeking information on efforts by former President Donald Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election. We'll examine this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out VOA Africa. For more English language programming, you can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the decision by the Hanoi People's High Court to uphold the 9-year prison sentence of renowned Vietnamese author and journalist Pham Doi Trang. As State Department spokesperson Ned Price noted in a statement expressing concerns over the decision, Trang is recognized internationally for her work to advance human rights and good governance in Vietnam and was a 2022 winner of the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Award. Trang was arrested in October 2020 and sentenced in December 2021 to 9 years in prison under Article 117 of Vietnam's Criminal Code, which criminalizes making, storing, distributing, or disseminating information, documents, and items against the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. International human rights organizations have called Article 117 a tool to silence individuals who are critical of the government, whether they are journalists, writers, or citizens exercising their fundamental right to free expression. The UN Working Group of Arbitrary Detention found Trang's detention to be arbitrary and in contravention of Vietnam's international human rights commitments and obligations. The government held Trang in pretrial custody for a year without allowing her access to a lawyer. In the nearly 2 years she has been detained, Trang's health has reportedly suffered. Spokesperson Price said the United States urges Vietnam to ensure adequate medical care and to allow access to Trang to assess her medical condition. In its most recent report on human rights conditions in Vietnam, the State Department cited NGOs that estimated as of August 2021, authorities held between 130 and 288 persons for political reasons. The State Department wrote, from January 1st to November 9th, authorities detained 29 and convicted 27 persons who were exercising internationally recognized human rights, such as freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and association. Spokesperson Price said, Trang's continued detention is the latest instance in an alarming pattern of arrests and sentencing of individuals in Vietnam for peacefully expressing their opinions. We call on the Vietnamese government to release Trang and to allow all individuals in Vietnam to exercise their right to freedom of expression without fear of retaliation, consistent with the human rights provisions in Vietnam's constitution and Vietnam's international obligations and commitments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.